Good afternoon. Today is Friday, April 12, 2019. It is noon, and this is panel number 4307, entitled Entrepreneurship. And in spite of the fact that I love puns, I did not come up with that title. A couple of quick housekeeping things. One is, it shocks me that I still have to say this so many years after cell phones have been invented, but please turn it off. It still amazes me how often a cell phone will ring in the middle of a panel, so please do not. In terms of questions and answers, we're going to be using both the CWA app as well as, you can raise your hand and get a card. If you're a student, which most of you are, please indicate that on the card because I try to give you guys preference. But again, either use the app, you can just go to this panel and click on question and answers and submit them and I'll get them up here, or raise your hand and we'll send you a card. I am particularly excited about this panel. I'm a longtime, entrepreneur supporter. So to be on this panel with these incredible people is fantastic. I like to find out something a little bit different about the people. So our introductions are going to be a little bit different than what you're used to. Going from left to right, Mattia Goljar. Did I pronounce it correctly?
Correct.
There we go. Is from Slovenia, launched his first company at age 19, and his first job was as a ski instructor. The fact that I particularly like is he and a group hold the Slovenian world record for egg tossing, 56 meters, and during
the egg did not break.
And the egg did not break. I assumed, because otherwise you wouldn't get the title. And, you can do the calculations to see what that is in Imperial if you want. They did not, however, get in the Guinness World Book of Records.
94 meters.
In case you were wondering. Yeah. Kimberly Moore is the CEO and founder of Go Together, Inc. There were a couple of quotes that she had that I really loved that I wanted to share with you in case you didn't see it. First of all, she believes in doing well by doing good. And that's the other unique thing about all these entrepreneurs is that they're working in different social, tracks. And she believes self-awareness is everything, which I also believe. Her interesting fact is that she actually did have a boss like the boss in The Devil Wears Prada. Nathan Nguyen is the CEO of Money Smarts. He's a serial entrepreneur, educator, best-selling author, creator of the Money Simulations game, husband and father of two people, and saw snow for the first time about 15 minutes ago. So if anybody really wants to be a hero and has a pair of earmuffs, particularly with Ralphie on it, he would be thrilled. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with each person getting to, talk approximately 8 minutes about what they feel about entrepreneurship. And then after everybody's had a chance to, to talk, we'll have questions and we'll have even more fun. So, awesome. Mattia.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming here. This is the one panel I was looking most forward to because, entrepreneurship is a big thing, and especially if it's kind of connected with youth and with you. Now, first and foremost, I don't really do formal things, so allow me to apologize for basically telling it like it is, and maybe if I say a swear word in the meantime, I'm from the Balkans, so anyways. I don't really particularly like the word serial entrepreneur, because it's kind of like, making me look good. Yeah, I started four companies, but don't have big eyes because three of them failed miserably. The first one actually was an online poker website, which we sold 2 years later, but it was highly illegal in my country. So again, put it into context. My mom was not pleased. But the funny thing is that this allowed me to actually figure out what my true passion is, and that was education. Because after we sold the company, and I was basically being an idiot all over Europe for a couple of years, I got this call from my former principal in my former high school back in my hometown. And he basically said, "Hey, Mattia, you started a company. We have a group of kids who want to do the same. How about you help them out?" And what ended up happening was that those guys created one of the very first Slovenian Facebook apps. That was a big thing back then. made some money. It wasn't a lot, something like $5,000, which for Eastern Europe for high schoolers was a ton. And then schools just started calling all over the place. And 2 years later, we had about a third of all the schools in our country using the curriculum that I created for that very first group. What ended up happening was we created this venture called Ustvarialnik, which you shouldn't try to pronounce or try to write, because it's weird. We had no idea this is going to scale internationally, so fuck it, let's just use a Slovenian name. But what we do essentially is we teach high school students how to earn a living by doing what they love. And the way we do this is we run a network of year-long programs where you meet with a mentor who's a young entrepreneur who also went to your former school, and that person helps you actually start. I'm not going to do more advertising for me and for our program, but because this is such a cool topic, allow me to give you a concrete story about a concrete entrepreneur who was a high schooler who did something really funny. And maybe we can use that as the beginning of the conversation today. Okay? So I met this 15-year-old kid. His name was Peter. And if you would have met him, you would basically picture the bad guy in the class, the guy who the teacher wouldn't like because he was always throwing paper balls to the girls in the front row, not really had good grades, but certainly had a lot of energy. And that kid, you know, he was always talking to me, I want to make money, I want to do a company, I want to do what's fun for me. And so, with that being said, basically school really wasn't important for him. Academically, nah, not so cool. What ended up happening with the guy was that he had to basically do psychology again. He flunked it, and he had very good persuasion skills. So he went to his teacher and basically told the teacher, look, tell you what, how about I write a paper, 20 pages, you give me the lowest possible passing grade, you don't have to deal with me whole year. So the teacher says yes. And in a typical fashion of a high school student, he starts writing the paper at 2 in the morning on the day of the deadline. Yeah. You've all been there, right? And then something really interesting happens. As he's typing down his paper, and he's really making himself comfortable with chips and everything on the table, he had this wireless keyboard, see, that, you know, you can have in your lap. And the batteries run out. And he was like, oh shit. But then his second reaction was, wait, I've been a part of this entrepreneurship program, you see. This is a problem. And Mattia told me that with a problem, there can be a solution and we can start a company. And he was like, hey, how about we start a company that makes wireless keyboards that charge themselves? Because surely you can turn that into energy, right? Picks up the phone, calls his friend, who is a bit of an electrical engineer. That was about 6 years ago. And basically the engineer said, yeah, no worries, just put some piezos on the bottom of the keyboard, piezoelectric element, you put two pieces of magnet together, they create a spark. Long story short, 2 months later they have a working prototype, like with duct tape and everything, but it worked. So then he drops this to my on my desk and says, I want to make money. I've invented something, now I will be an entrepreneur. Now what? Well, Peter, the only thing that you need to do is to utilize your skill of conversation and persuasion, go to basically Radio Shack of Slovenia, which was this big chain store, get to the CEO, drop this on the table and ask for advice. So he did. And then my phone rings 2 hours later. And he was like, Mattia, shit. He ordered 500 units. I need this. I need money. I need keyboards. I need a production line. I need Chinese people. Literally. And when that happened, basically, what we ended up doing was something very, very simple. I've no idea how to sell keyboards. He doesn't either. But what we know is that we can find people who do, and we can resource him with money and everything else needed. So what we simply said, okay, for 500 units, this is how much money we can make. For 500 units, this is how much of an initial investment we need. Here's the difference. Okay, hey, investor, you have money. This is the difference that we're going to split. And he starts talking to every single rich person in Slovenia. 2 months before his graduation as a senior, he raised enough money that 4 people got employed and he started his company, becoming the youngest Slovenian that raised venture funding while he was still in high school before his SATs.
Wow.
Which is a damn good story. So what I wanted to say with this is, yes, obviously, this room probably believes that everyone can be an entrepreneur. But my real question is, can we teach this? Is this something that can be codified in a series of steps that others can do? Because you see, what happened with Peter was really interesting. When his class saw that the idiot from the last row, quote unquote, started a company and made a killing, everyone else wanted to do the same. So his best friend, who was probably even more of a basket case, actually came to me and he said, I also see a problem. I will also make a company. So what he did, true story, he came to me and he said, the problem that I experience is that I want to tell people to fuck off. But I am a gentleman, so I don't want to do it out loud. So, just like a referee uses a red card to take you off the field, he created a fuck off card, which is a small card, kind of like a business card that you deliver to somebody when you want to tell them to fuck off, and then you just leave. And that's the whole story. And he had a business model behind it, you see. Because he saw that the ideal customer segment for that would be primary school kids. So the way he distributed this was actually very simple. In every high school in Ljubljana, in my hometown, he had a dealer who would be buying those cards off him for half a euro and then selling them on for 1 euro. Made 5,000 bucks, had the best vacation of his life. I would like to conclude these two stories with two observations. Number one, you will never see both of these kids in the unemployment bureau, right? If you can sell the fuck off card, you can sell anything. And number two, examples are the ones that make you start. And we need to learn by the good examples, and I hope this is what we're going to be talking about. Thank you so much for inviting me here.
You sure you don't want to go?
Kimberly, good luck.
All right, thanks. I'm going to need it. Well, I'm Kimberly Moore, and I am CEO and co-founder of GoTogether. And I am actually an accidental entrepreneur. I'm not the kid in high school who wanted to start a business, you know, wanted to make a lot of money. That really wasn't my story. I did realize in high school, though, that I was a builder. Like, I'm a problem solver. In my particular case, the first problem that I solved was, and I'm going to tell on myself in terms of how old I am, my high school experienced the first class of desegregation in my state. And so I had the good fortune of having lived in the community where the kids were coming from and in the community where the kids currently lived. So I had friends in this community and friends in that community. So like most parents who, you know, can get upset and concerned about all the stories, thank God we didn't have 24-hour media while that was going on. You know, the parents were super upset about, what does this mean? Da, da, da. The kids, you know, what's going on? But for me, it was like, my gosh, my friends who are coming are great people. Why can't I get my friends who are here to know that and quiet our parents down, right? So for the first couple months of school, it was a little scary, actually. People had sit-ins and, you know, mini protests. Some kids were, you know, carted away to other schools. And I said, you know, it's not fair because my friends are really cool and these guys are cool. The guys who were from the other school were playing sports now with the kids in the existing school. And I got an idea to ask our high school principal if I could do an event that would bring the two of those communities together. And that's what I did. You know, I thought of the idea of having a fashion show. That's a good way to get the girls in, trying on new clothes and everything. It's also a good way to get the boys in. And so I could recruit people. I just happened to be really good friends with our state's junior miss, and my brother was a DJ, so I kind of put this whole thing together. And during our 4 weeks of preparation, we became really good friends, this group of about 30 kids. And by the time the event actually happened, it was really a momentous occasion. 500 people came. It was really, really awesome. And that showed me that I could do something, right? We became friends, set the standard, and all the other rumblings started to go away. So I felt really excited by that. So that kind of was the seed for me that I could build something. And fast forward, why I'm really an entrepreneur is because self-awareness is everything. Mm-hmm. And as I was facing a milestone birthday, I made a decision that I would not live in regret. Mm-hmm. And then my second reason for being an entrepreneur is I heard a guy do a talk, opportunities come, opportunities go, and opportunities come no more. So from 2002 until the year I started the startup, which was 2014, every opportunity that would come my way, I'd hear this guy in my ear. I was like, okay, I have to evaluate it. So when the idea of having a way for kids to get to and from school and helping parents be able to alleviate the stress of leaving work and going to get their kids or rushing out the door, I was actually solving my sister's problem. And my niece went to a private school. My sister had to drive an hour from her client to go pick her up to take her 20 minutes to a practice. So this was going to be my side hustle. I'm going to do this for families, make a little money on the side. And I was the first Uber for kids in 2014. It was called the Mom Valet. I created a scheduling tool, a payment tool, because I'm not leaving the house unless you pay me first, and a tracking tool so parents could track my trip. Mm-hmm. And I just put it together in about 10 days. I forgot to tell you a little bit of my background. I have some wireless technology background. And so I go to my sister and I go, listen, I'm solving the problem. Here's the website. Look, and she's like, wow, where's the flyer? I just wanted to have a flyer to share with my friends. So I did that, and it got an amazing response from people. I just, for jokes, put it on Facebook, and it was like, oh, do you go here? Do you go there? Fast forward 5 months, I'm having lunch with a friend, and he looks at me and he says, Kimberly, you got to solve this problem. Like, this is a real business. This is a real big problem. And I think you could do it. I'm like, not really. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm a consultant. I actually used to produce events like the CWA. And he goes, so when was the last time you worked for somebody? I was like, 12 years. He said, you know what? I think you could be an entrepreneur. Yeah. So I hear after he says that, don't live in regret, Kimberly. Opportunities come, opportunities go, and opportunities come no more. Mm-hmm. So I give myself an escape clause, said, you know what, I'll pursue it, but it's probably not going to work out, and then I can go back to producing events, which I love. Well, I kind of got a little hooked on the problem solving, right? Figuring out what's the business model. How do we make money? What are the things we need to do to create a great experience for parents, a great experience for kids? And that led to 14 months of a beta. And then at the end of that time, I realized our greatest money opportunity, revenue opportunity, was to have a shared ride, which we know as Uber Pool or Lyft Line. But the only way to do that is with technology, right? Any money you thought you were going to make, you'd burn if you're getting people to do that. And I landed in a conversation with a company that I found just Googling on the internet to ask her to license the technology. She goes, "I that's a great idea. However, I want to sell my company. Do you want to buy it?" And so I bought her company 90 days later. So now I'm really in. You know, no turning back. I made a pivot, which entrepreneurs do all the time, to just lead our company with this software platform. And essentially, our software is sold to schools to allow their parents to create carpools, walk, or bike together. And we're in 48 schools in 25 states.
Can you guys all hear me?
Yeah.
I don't want to blow everybody's ears. So, first of all, my name is Nathan Wynn. Thank you so much for taking your time out. I know it's lunchtime, so instead of going having food, you guys are here with us, so thank you. For all the students, raise your hand. Raise your hand, students. All right, so round of applause for you guys, because this event is for you guys. I want to start with defining entrepreneurship. And I think a lot of times people define entrepreneurs as company starters. You have to have a business. But entrepreneurship is more so the spirit of taking responsibility of a problem that nobody else wants to take, or taking responsibility when nobody wants to take to solve that problem. So, and a lot of people think that you have to start a company. It doesn't have to be. You could go into a company, take your boss's responsibility, and eventually you take your CEO's responsibility, you run that company, and you buy that company. There are many mentors of mine that are billionaires. That's how they get started. And they are described as entrepreneurs. But they got started inside of the company. They rise up because of the entrepreneurial spirit of taking responsibility that's not theirs. So if you want to get a promotion, get a raise, you know, you have to add more value. You have to add doing more things. So that is what I would like to define as entrepreneurship to start with. So for me, my story was I was 12 years old. My mom and dad, I'm youngest of six kids. We immigrated from Vietnam. And the only reason why we're able to get the invitation to America was because my dad served with the United States during the Vietnam War and became a prisoner of war for 10 years. Because of his sacrifice, when he was released, you know, America said, hey, would you like to come over because of your service? So I came over here when I was 5 years old. When I was 12, I started to notice that, boy, all of my friends' parents were my sister and brother's age. Their grandparents' age were my parents' age. And so the traditional path of going to college, get a great job, save money, and then you can take care of your family, your mom and dad, to thank them, it's not, couldn't work for me. Because I did the math, I'll be in my 30s. I'm 33 today. My dad is turning 80. And just 2 weeks ago, I was with a friend who is now his late 30s. He sold his company for quite a few million dollars. And he said, Nathan, you know, I screwed up. I said, why? Because of something that he didn't do that I did. And I'm like, well, I never thought about that. So let me show you what happened. 12 years old, mom and dad were Catholic. My mom and dad was invited to go to Rome. Super excited, and then 3 months later, crickets. I'm like, mom and dad, why aren't you going? Well, because it costs money. What's money? So there's things, you got to start paying. I'm like, all right. And then that's what they said next really got to me. He says, Nathan, even if we did have the money, we wouldn't go. I'm like, why? Okay, now I'm really confused. We need the money for you because we don't know the education. That's when I realized, my gosh, my dad was in prison for 10 years. Now I'm his, you know, I'm his shackles on his legs. My mom and dad needs it. And I said, the day that my signature becomes legal, I got to do something about it. And I said, the only path for me to become and to help my mom and dad without any permission is to be an entrepreneur, is to go and do something on my own that can add value in exchange for some type of monetary compensation, help my parents out. So when I graduated high school, I started my first company. I was flipping houses. I was buying and selling houses. Nice. But I said, but where'd you get the money? You're broke. I said, yeah. So what happened was I quickly read everything about real estate. And they said, you know, if you're too smart, you'll be afraid of doing it. I was just dumb enough, you know, to do it. But smart enough to know the first step, which is to just get going. So once I figured out what I wanted to do, I found a house that I figured would make some money. I need to get the money for it. And my parents didn't have the money, nor my relatives would believe me. So I went and asked my high school advisor, hey, I found a house that's worth 120. I can buy for 80, but I need 40,000. He says, when do you need the money? He says, he asked me, when do you need the money, Nathan? I said, well, if you give me $40,000 today, and 90 days later, I'll give you 45. So you make $5,000, 12% in 90 days. This is what he said to me. He says, Nathan, I've watched you volunteer, because that's what I did in high school. I just volunteered because I thought my mom and dad says, the best way for you to learn anything is to go and apply. So I was in school learning a bunch of stuff, but I want to go out and apply. And in Vietnamese, call help han. Help is to learn, han is to apply. So volunteering is where I apply and learn everything I can. And so he says, so through this, he said, I've watched you volunteer. You come early and you stayed late. Nathan, I'll give you that check. So he went out of the car, wrote me that check. And at that moment, I realized something. People says you need money to make money. It's true, but it has to be your money. That's number one. Number two, you have to have credit score. I didn't have credit score. But what I learned from that day was I can borrow money through my who score, who I am as a person, through my knowledge, experience, and character. And that's what I want to share with students these days. Just because you don't have a credit score, your reputation is your who score. Who you are as a person, the fact that you're here says something about you as a person. So that's where I got my first start in entrepreneurship, and I got that money. I flipped that house. We ended up $15,000 after our expenses, because these hands can't do anything other than making things. So ultimately, I made $15,000. I called up the church. I said, 6 years ago, you invited my parents to Rome, and they couldn't go because of money. I want to send them today. They called my mom and dad. It was the most emotional experience ever, because then I knew the power of entrepreneurship. You can do it. No permission whatsoever. If you can dream, you put the hard work and determination behind it, people will believe in you to do it. So that was the first thing I did. Send my parents to Rome. And then since then, I did more businesses to be able to help my mom and dad realize their dream. And for me, it was I took responsibility to elevate my family to the next level. Because in order to have a different result, I got to be the one stick my neck out there to do something different, to have a different result for my family. And I said, if I failed, my mom and dad has five other siblings. They can rely on them. One failure doesn't mean anything, right? And so that was the starting. When go back to my friend, he says, he has all the money in the world now, but his parents can't go anywhere because they're too old. And just like today, my parents are limited into what they can do with the experience. And so for me, is what I'm grateful for, the spirit of entrepreneurship is that you don't need permission. You just need the determination and the courage to get started and the willingness to ask for help and the humility to overcome any failure and to never doubt yourself. With that, I just want to share with you that I'm so grateful to be here and to be able to share with you what I've learned from my mentors, and that if I can be of help any way I can, I'm all yours, so thank you.
I want to start off by sharing something, because I think you'll get a kick out of it. At the beginning of this, I said, each of you could talk for about 8 minutes, and then we'll do questions. And all three of them went, 8 minutes. I'll only need 30 seconds. 8 minutes for each one of you. So, again, don't believe anything. I want to start off, with something that really fascinated me, and that is, I think most of the people in this room feel that they have to solve a big problem. They have to come up with the next Facebook. They have to come up with the whatever. And the common thread, I heard from all of you was, no, just find a problem and fix it. And to your point, you said, can we teach entrepreneurship? So I'd kind of be interested in all three of you saying, how did they find, what's the secret to finding the problem that they're going to start a new company with?
Mm-hmm. Are we going like...
Any way you want.
I can start. So that's the question, because a lot of people come, I want to do a business, but I don't have an idea, so I'm not really sure how. The thing is, the idea never happens. You usually either stumble upon it, or it creates itself only after. Allow me to share a story to this this effect. There was this guy in Slovenia who wanted to be a professional surfer, which is basically very similar to like somebody from Colorado trying to do it, because you need to go for thousands of miles to find the nearest appropriate ocean. Still, he did everything possible to get it done. He would work in a bar, make some money, buy a van, go with that van to Portugal and live in that van until money runs out and came back. So that was his cycle. Surfing, bartending, surfing, bartending, and he got rather good at it. At some point, he actually was able to get into the European Cup of Surfing, which was a big competition, not a professional one. So he didn't get the professional contract he so much wanted. And that was when he started thinking about, you know, giving up. Once you're 26 and a sportsman, you know, you either got it or you don't. That guy didn't. But he wanted to do something with that. So he spends about half a year traveling around the world, trying to figure out what he could do. And then he returns back to his beloved Portugal. And as he's walking down the beach, he sees this small part of the beach fenced off. And there was a for sale sign on it. Asks about the price. It wasn't really a lot of money. Impulsively, he decides, I'm going to buy it. So that guy then puts a camp on that beach. And in that camp, he builds a surfing school. And every summer after that, about 200 Slovenians would come to that camp, learn how to surf, and he would make just enough money so that he wouldn't need to actually work in the winter, so he could buy plane tickets for Australia and keep on surfing. And that's his new cycle now. Portugal, Australia, and so on. I met that guy about 3 years after he started his surfing school, and it was a very pleasant conversation, and at some point I felt that I could ask him what was really on my mind. And I asked him, come on, tell me, I have a feeling that everything in your life, you've succeeded. Beautiful family, beautiful lifestyle, fantastic business, but tell me, are you feeling bad that you've never made it as a pro? Because, you know, you wanted it so much. And he looks at me a little bit bemused, and he said, Mattia, really? Oh, no, I never wanted to be a professional surfer. And I was like, what? His answer was, I just wanted to surf. And now I can do it all the time. And what's more, others pay me for it. The moral of the story here is that the definition of entrepreneurship, in my opinion, is quite simple. Find something that you enjoy doing, and then figure out a way that others pay you for it. Because if you do that, the end result isn't monetary, but something that makes you happy. So the question was, what's the passion? What's the business idea? The things that you like. You're an expert in those things already. As long as you have the determination and the perseverance to actually get shit done and deliver on that passion, I think you'll be fine.
Hmm. One of the things that, you know, in society, whenever I'm constantly in meetings, I hear a lot of complaints. If there's a problem, there's complaints. And for me, is the more complaints I hear, if there's a pattern, there's an opportunity. I think in today's world, going to David's question, is like, you know, when you look at problems, yes, it is true. If you can solve a big problem, you have a big company. You solve a small company, you have a small, you know, you have a small problem you're solving, you have a small company. But at the end of the day, you can grow any company to any size, in my opinion, based on how far you're willing to go. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's called interest. If it interests you, go. I'll share with you one crazy example of a friend of mine who told me a story of this young guy who created a website for people who have a fetish for feet. Mm-hmm. Feet. Let me say that again. Feet. Pictures of feet. So this gentleman, this young buck, started a website, a membership website. You have to pay $7.99 a month. So you can have unlimited access to pictures of people's feet. So if he can make money on people's feet, anybody can make money, anything. As long as you like it. Mm-hmm. As long as you're willing to have customers talk to you about feet and you're comfortable about it, then have at it. Right? So the sky's the limit. The problem can be anything. But at the end of the day, what's going to make you happy? And more importantly, are the people that you serve in that environment is the people that you like to be around with? And that's how I pick and choose what type of opportunities I want to get in, is I want to make sure that the people I serve are the people I like to hang out with. So my newest venture is in education, because I love working with high school and college students, helping them figure out the concept of career planning. Because right now, they all say, too many parents say, my kids is super smart. Any parents have said their kid's always smart, right? Super smart, but they don't know what they want to do. So I asked the student, what do you want to do in your life? They said, well, I don't know. But all I want to do is I want to make money. So the real question about career clarity is, how can I make money doing what I like? So I realized the contact that the subject is all about money. That's why I wrote the book, Money Smarts. Because once you have the money smarts, you can do anything that you're interested in, build a skill, and monetize it. That's the essence of being money smart, right? And so, for me, is going down to just going, peeling the onion. What is that really like? And the people I really surround myself with, when I solve that problem, do I like that? Then I would go all in. Because to Steve Jobs saying, and I'll finish, he says, yes, it is true. You got to be, you know, starting anything great is not easy. It's going to be hard. Anybody sane will quit. Only the insane people that are passionate will continue the journey far enough that they will make success the only option possible.
Is this on? Can you hear me? My voice is really... Okay, here we go.
Okay.
When I first got started, I didn't have a framework of what entrepreneurship was. So I just, like, inhaled people's YouTube videos and learned, yep, like, everything, right? And Steve Blank, who's at USC, and the co-founder, co-writer of The Lean Startup. Anybody heard of that before?
Yeah.
Okay. What he said, and I was thankful for because that's what we were doing, he says, make sure you're providing a cure and not a vitamin with your business that you're starting. Okay. And so how I interpret that is that when you're providing a cure, you're solving a real problem that someone has. A vitamin is just kind of a nice thing, like feet, you know? Like, you don't need that to live, but it's a nice thing to have. So I think that that helped me say, okay, we're solving a real problem, and we just need to figure out how we solve this problem at scale.
Yeah.
And it's just a... Like you said, it's really hard. I hope we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. Really hard. And people around you will think you are insane for continuing when they don't see the returns that you see. As an entrepreneur, I don't know how, if you guys feel this way. I see the end. The first level of success, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that keeps me going every single day. Every single day. And I also agree with you that I only work with people that I think I'm going to enjoy being around. And I intentionally stay away from people, even though they might have money or something that I could use. I intentionally just don't. I get that vibe, and I'm like, yeah, no. Great to meet you.
So one thing, reminder, questions through the app or raise your hand and somebody will bring you a card. First thing I want to comment on is, Nathan, my son really is very bright. So. Introduce you to him later, you'll be impressed, I promise you. So I told all of you, you know, one of the things that I do is I mentor young entrepreneurs. And there's an archetype out there called the fool. And the interesting thing about the fool is it's not what we normally think of it. The fool is too naive to realize that they shouldn't do something. And it feels like that's one of the common themes that, you know, that you're talking about. You know, yes, it's great to have smarts, and yes, it's great to have, you know, talent or whatever. But really, it's, you know, it is either the fearlessness or the naivete. And since you already mentioned that, I don't want you to talk about that further. But we had talked a little bit before about failure. And I think that's the other thing that all of you as entrepreneurs, you know, deal with, is fear of failure. Could you talk a little bit about why that should not be a huge fear?
I think failure is when your character develops. And I think that I'm only who I am is because of my failure. And it kind of sounds cliche, because when you're in it, it sucks, and you never want to think about it, and you never want to experience it, and you never want to wish it upon it even to your enemies. Because failure is just, it sucks. But in hindsight, you always appreciate it, because it's the thing that makes you grow the most. And that whole saying is, you know, something that doesn't change, you know, challenge you, it won't change you. And so I'll tell you two failures that propel me. And because sometimes failure forces you to do things that, you know, that you didn't know that you're capable of. So my first, so I had my first success with flipping real estate, right? So with mini success, it gets to your head, right? You're young. Oh man, if I can flip this house, let me do a bigger project. So this project, I put $100,000 down, so exactly $94,000 down, and it was a big development project. I was 20 years old. And I went to like a development project, and this was after, you know, series of seven. You know, everything was like the mice. I can touch it; it turns to gold. This one, I was so confident that I can just get in. It turns out I was part of a big scam artist where what I bought in they didn't even own, and it was because it was hubris, right? It was you became so overconfident, you didn't even I didn't even do my due diligence, and I lost all that. You know, $100,000. So for me, that was the biggest blow to my self-confidence, but it was the biggest medicine that I needed to help me become more humble and become a student of life for the rest of my life, is to constantly learn and to constantly reevaluate that, was this mistake because of the business, or was this mistake because of my lack of character, my lack of experience, my lack of knowledge? And it was the latter. It was me. And so I used that to propel forward. And so whenever I built any type of new business or look at any venture, any investments, I had to do my due diligence, make sure I do enough research, and I make sure the person I'm working with that I trust and verify. This person, I said, hey, I trust you. You come for good trust. No problem. Here's the money. Didn't even check that guy out. Turns out he knew I was inexperienced. So there's a whole saying, a guy with money and a guy with experience meet. The guy with experience get the money. The guy with the money get the experience. They trade off, right? And so that's what happened. I was the guy with the money, met with the guy with experience. He took my money. I took his experience. So that was my first lesson. The second one was I got into retail. My first customer, it was June 5th, 2006, by the name of John Campbell. He bought $5,000 worth of products. First cousin, oh my gosh, hit the jackpot. 2 weeks later, it turns out, he stole somebody else's credit card, spent $5,000. So I got a chargeback, which means the bank took the $5,000 back, and I lost all the products. Again, soul searching. Was this my fault, or is it business fault? Again, it's my fault. I need to learn how merchant service is done. I need to learn how to vet customers. I need to learn blah, blah, blah. So all these things propel me forward that am I going to quit or I'm going to make the company bigger. So my company went from zero to $100,000 in 6 months to $1.2 million in 12 months to over $3 million in 18 months. Not because I wanted that way, because I had to, because I made too many mistakes and I wanted to make up for those failures. So that was it.
So I'm still making mistakes. and sometimes they're small ones, right? They're not large ones like that. But I think that the thing for me as an entrepreneur is that it really is an experience of my character development over time. That's really what's getting challenged. Like actually selling, I'm a great salesperson, I can close business, all that. But all the other micro decisions that happen, I have failed. You know, I failed with one developer that we worked with. I failed to require him to do a couple of things, believing that he knew what he was doing, and I failed that way. So this time, working with a different team, I know exactly what to ask for. I know exactly how to stay on budget. I way overspent money on that other guy. So my mistakes, for the most part, are like micro, but I'm still making them, right? As a new entrepreneur, I'm not without a ton of mentors. As a matter of fact, I was on the phone with one today. I'm getting ready to go into a negotiation with a very large company to be a channel partner, and we've got the domain expertise and they've got the cash. I'm paying attention to that. So I might have to talk to you later so I don't make a mistake and bail. But, you know, I'm David, there, Goliath. There's plenty of room for mistakes there. And the way I can reduce that is having people that I can ask questions of and get the information that I need in order to go forward. So I'm so deep in it right now. We're so early. My mistakes feel like micro, not big, but big enough to me that it's developing my character.
So apparently we're taking 5 minutes to talk about war stories. Cool. So my first company was a huge success. You know, hubris, totally. Picture a 21-year-old kid who sold a company and is like, I have fuck off money. And then, of course, after a while, sure, everything that I do is going to be perfect. So the idea was to do it right this time and do it systematically. And the first question was, Mattia, what am I good at? And obviously I can talk, so let's do public relations. So we had this crazy idea of creating a web platform that would basically be a syndication of news. Whoever wanted to put something into the media, you would put it there in the website. The website would know which journalist, which area, and so on, and then it would be sold. What we did was we spent a ton of money to put the website together, hired a really awesome programmer to use the most up-to-date technology ever. We didn't know shit about technology. And we didn't read the Lean Startup as well, because, you know, otherwise we might have tested some things first. So deposited like 50K in just into the website.
Woo.
And then on the day of the launch, like, we click the website, it goes public, we've dropped a lot of money into marketing, and zero. 1 month and a half, not one single order. And we ended up doing the service for free for the first month. Still, not one single order. What the hell's happening? So about 2 months in, I get a phone call from somebody who was quite upset, and he's like, you guys don't offer a serious service. I ordered it 3 times already. You've sent me a beautiful confirmation email. Nothing. Whoa, can you send the email over? I want to see. So the guy sends me over confirmation of order number 385. So it turns out that our programmer apparently made a mistake in the code. The things got basically, the guy got the email, but we didn't get anything into our database. My first reaction was, let's go and kill the programmer. Obviously. First, then it ended up into a negotiation, and he said, I'm going to fix it, which he did, true to his word. A month later, we relaunched. Now it really works. And then immediately we got another order for another guy who made a legit thing that wants to go into the media. We prepared the press release, clicked send, and I'm like sitting with my co-founder, put my cell phone on the table, and tell him, look, it's going to take 20 minutes, and the biggest financial daily is going to call me. He's going to want an interview. True, the phone does ring. And I'm like the happiest person in the world. Hello, this is Mattia. This is the press agency. How can I help? The journalist on the other side, his reaction was, fuck, expletive, are you out of your bloody mind? You've been sending me crazy emails, stop. And I'm like, no, sir, I sent you one email for a cool story. You should publish it. Are you crazy? It's not one email. You've sent me like 5,000 emails and they're still coming. So what ended up happening was that our programmer made a mistake that instead of sending an email once, it was on loop and it was sending and sending and sending until we actually destroyed the server and put the server offline. Every single journalist in Slovenia got something like 80,000 emails.
Oh my God.
The biggest newspaper in the country couldn't use their email for 2 days because we destroyed it. And that was the end of our press release. Obviously, once you piss off your first customers and your key partners, then you're done. And for the next 3 years, whenever I had any dealings with the Slovenian media, they came to me and they were like, oh yeah, you're the idiot who deserves it. And I'm like, yeah, but to make a moral out of this story, which does have an interesting lesson, a year after that, so that's about 4 years after starting that particular company, I host a TV show on the biggest TV station in the country that also had their servers destroyed, and they remembered me because of those emails. So what I want to say is this. Never, ever expect anything in life, not just entrepreneurship, that it's just going to succeed in one step. It doesn't happen. Entrepreneurship specifically is one of those things where you're trying things out for the first time because it doesn't exist yet. So what ends up happening is, instead of what they teach you in school, do this and do this and have the right answer, it's a series of iterations. It's a series of small mistakes and prototyping which is something that, for a very weird reason, teachers don't really know, but sports people know and musicians know. Musicians specifically. You know what happens when you play the piano and you're just repeating and repeating and repeating? You're making failure after failure after failure after failure, but we call it practice.
And I would like to point out, you got great press on that, so in that sense, it really worked well. So there's another theme that I'm seeing here, which kind of fascinates me, and that is, at one level, you know, you need to believe in yourself, you need to believe in your vision, and you need to be, to use my terminology, naive enough to believe that you can do it. Mm-hmm. You have to balance that with working with the right people and asking the right questions and having the right type of protection. So I'm curious to hear you talk a little bit about that, you know, that balance between saying, I want to work with the best people, but I also need to communicate clearly and have protection that I'm going to get what I want. Go for it.
Yeah, okay. See, I don't really think it's the people bit per se, because we need to go a step further and talk about the individual. What is this panel, the three of us, we're basically being hype guys for entrepreneurship right now, which is good, but there is, in all seriousness, something has to be said. Vision, passion is all very fine. Your head wants it, your heart wants it, but then your hands need to do it. And when I look at the vast majority of the entrepreneurs that go into our program and people who want to consider a business, the execution skills are not quite there.
That's good.
And this is a true problem. If we want to create an entrepreneur, in fact, the very first thing that we need to achieve is we need to enable them to execute systematically on a long term, which the vast majority of the people simply do not do. The vast majority of students today absolutely do not do, due to a world that basically gives you everything in abundance. So how do we crack that? For the most part, business ideas are not developed when people simply decide not to pursue them further. Why does this happen? Well, because the confidence of the person stops. And it's easier for you to say, I don't want to do it. So concretely, what do we do in our program and what you as students should do are a couple of steps. Number one, break up whatever you want to achieve into small, actionable, tangible things that you can do on a daily basis. And talk to somebody to help if you can't do it. Everyone will help a young entrepreneur, especially in Boulder. Number two, even more important, you need to get to your first success. And what we do as mentors is actually just making sure that whoever goes into our program will have the first prototype, will have the first sale, will have the first media article published about them. Because when you get that, then you get the ball rolling, and then you believe in yourself, and then you can get it done. And that's also fundamentally true, probably for other areas, not just entrepreneurship. And I'm really going to leave it at that so that the others can carry on. But just do not forget about the execution, because that part is important.
Kimberly, I just want to add one quick thing to that. And that is, he was talking about the first success. Sometimes you have to redefine what success is. Yep. Success may not be the first sale. Success might be you know, the working prototype, whatever. So I think that's really important that... Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to redefine success. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's perfect. I have a lot of people who come to me and say, I've got this great idea, and, you know, this is what I'm going to do, and they stay in their head, right? Execution is everything. Mm-hmm. My mentor that I talked to this morning was like, there's four things you need to focus on. Execution, speed, your passion, and having right people around you. You got those four things? You can keep going. But execution, and it really can be very small steps. Mm-hmm. Just take the next step, right? You have an idea, secure the web domain. $7-$8 mm-hmm. a year, right? You don't have to do anything with it. Just secure the web domain.
Yeah.
Just get started. Just do the next thing. Mm-hmm. Don't know what the next thing is? Ask somebody, what's the next thing I should do here? I think to your point, you have to be humble. Like, you don't know all the things that you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got to be willing to take a step. It's vulnerable, right? Because people are going to see you fail. That is one of the things of being an entrepreneur, is people get to see you fail. But people also appreciate the courage that it takes to fail, the courage that it takes to take the next step. So, you know, light the trail. Get it started.
Mm-hmm. When I was growing my company, I had to hire people. And I was 20, and I was hiring everybody that was 25 and above. So they're much older than I was. So for me was, over the years, I realized when I graduated college, I had a staff of 12 full-time people. And I felt like I was riding a bicycle on the freeway, which is very dangerous. The company is growing, and we can grow. And this is what I realized. Companies don't go out of business. They grow out of business. They grow too fast, too quick, and the CEO and the founder can't grow with it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of venture capitalists, when they invest in a company, they replace the head guy because that person is no longer relevant to run mm-hmm. this big company. So one of the big things I share, there's four things. I call it leveling up, is increase my knowledge, mm-hmm. increase my skills, right? It's like if you have knowledge but you have no skills, it's going to fall. So knowledge and then skill, you keep on stacking. Knowledge and skill, because over then, that's how you get experience. That's where you get the wisdom. So knowledge, skill, experience, and then the whole circle is the character that builds around all that. Mm-hmm. And so what I found out is, To grow and to scale in anything, in any venture or work in any company to rise up, is if we want to grow, I have to grow in knowledge, experience, skill, and character. And that's always been my foundation to growing. And if there's anything that I realize that I want to achieve that's bigger than who I am currently capable of doing, then I need to level up. Read books for knowledge. Ask for mentorship for experience. Go out there and execute. Do something. Break things down. I mean, the last thing I want is another good idea. Too many people ask me, hey, Nathan, can you mentor me? I said the greatest definition of mentorship is to get your hands dirty, get a bloody nose, fall and get a bloody nose. Exactly. Mentors will help you clean up your bloody nose, mm-hmm. wipe your hands, and get you out there and fail again. Mm-hmm. But if you come to me all pretty up, your hands ain't dirty, or your sleeves not rolled up, there's nothing to mentor.
Yep. Yep.
You kidding me?
Yep.
So ideas don't mean anything. Get out there, execute, get your hands dirty, then mentorship's going to show up.
Mm-hmm. So I've got a great question from the audience, and one where you actually do have to answer briefly. So that's going to be a great challenge for you. And that is, what is one book that each of you would recommend to the audience to read? I'm going to start off by saying, believe it or not, for me it's The Godfather. I felt I learned so much about running a company from that. It isn't funny. And anybody wants to hear about that, I'll be glad to tell you afterwards. One book.
For me, is How to Win Friends and Influence People, because it's about human connection. As society is becoming more high tech, we become more high touch. That book will help us become more high touch with people. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
So I'm going to jump in and say it's going to be The Mum Test by Rob Fitzpatrick, which is this very little known book about scripts, how to ask somebody to start a company. What are the questions you ask? Test the product, and it absolutely increases your speed of execution. And it's a short, short book.
Man, this mic. I don't know.
There we go.
I've read so many books, but here's one, The Entrepreneur Myth.
That's a really good one.
I started that early in my journey. And basically, it just kind of gives you an idea of what an entrepreneur is and helps you figure out, am I an entrepreneur? Mm-hmm. Right? Some people are consultants, and they stay that way. Mm-hmm. But there are you can figure out whether or not you're an entrepreneur.
Good question, by the way.
And I'm going to suck up short to this smallly, because in the conversation I have with you, Nathan, I'm definitely buying Money Smarts.
Oh, thank you.
I am too.
And I'm serious. I actually am. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
So another question that came from the audience, which I like, and you had mentioned this a little bit, Nathan, is you don't necessarily have to start a company. You know, yep. You can become an entrepreneur from within a company. And again, I'm going to ask you to be a little bit briefer, because I'm hoping we can get at least one more question in. Yeah. But how do you become an entrepreneur from within a company? How to use those skills there?
Taking your manager's responsibility as your own.
Yeah.
I actually did that at Verizon. Mm-hmm. I took my manager's job and built a whole division from the ground up. I did exactly that.
Yeah. When it's not your responsibility, you can still take it.
Mm-hmm. Just be a self-starter. And actually don't wait for other people to tell you what to do, but you actually go and proactively do it. That's also a good way to learn anyways.
Okay. As entrepreneurs, how do you frame vulnerability?
It's being sincere and telling your story and being honest with yourself. I think sometimes look in the mirror and confronting that person that you are your own boss, and that's a scary thought.
When numbers talk, bullshit walks. So many people believe that they are doing great and they make an appearance of being great. I will do business cards. I will buy a car on leasing. That's a typical thing in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know? No, it's the metrics. It's the stuff that you do. It's the things that you achieve. And you need to be humble about that and basically open and transparent.
Yeah, I agree with exactly what you said. The other thing is that with my team is the willingness to be vulnerable in front of them. Like if I make a mistake that I don't try to, as you know, I'm the boss, right? Mm-hmm. I could say whatever I want, but I've faced this many times, really say, hey, listen, you know, messed up there, could have handled it differently, and they appreciate that. You know, we went through, there's another book that I'm reading right now called The Messy Middle. Have you ever heard of that? Mm-hmm. By Scott Belsky. It's basically when your company's at that place of inflection where you can go up or you can go down. But it's in that messy place, like got traction, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, you know, just being able to be at a low point in your company and have to go to your team and say, hey, we've got to make some changes, you know, this is what's happening, and just being honest with them. Mm-hmm. And having every last one of them around the table that says, what do we need to do? How can we help? And I think if we had tried to sell a different story about what was happening, I don't think they would appreciate that at all. But they did appreciate the fact that we just laid the cards out. Here's where we are, and they were like, hey, come on, what do we need to do? And it's been amazing since then.
As a mentor, you know, the biggest problem I see people doing time after time is either not being specific enough in what problem they're solving, you know, or deciding that their audience is everybody. You know, it's the question that I always hate the answer of the most. You know, who's your target market? And they'll say, oh, anybody could use that. And of course, anybody could, but that's not going to get you sales. So could you comment a little bit on this idea of really, you know, defining your market and defining your product or idea?
I'll take this one first. Personally, I don't think I can do everybody. I can't sell to everything, right? So the one thing I know about myself is I'm not a business-to-consumer entrepreneur. I'm a B2B, business-to-business entrepreneur. And then to get even laser sharp, I want to be so smart about a particular kind of customer that I'm going to kick everybody's butt who's trying to come after me. Mm-hmm. I want to see the things that they don't see. And you can't do that if you're trying to, you know, do all of this. But I feel like even as a young company, we're kicking butt because I'm studying the space and I'm studying these customers and I understand the problems that they don't even see they have.
For me, it's the customer that will benefit the most of the solution because they have that pain the most. Mm-hmm. So when I was publishing my book, Money Smarts, they said, so who is this thing for? I said, this is for young adults, high school seniors graduating to college, and these are college students. And they're like, but you could have done, no, I want to specifically focus on that because this is the time period where I call the fit periods, where they make all the major financial decisions in life that they can carry the rest of their, that's going to have consequences or benefits. Mm-hmm. But they're like, but you can, no, I want that market, and that's that. Because you have to stick, you got to be true to who you are and who you're not. Yep. And they're like, but you got, you got to be true to who you are. I think that's the key.
Yeah. Let me share a bit of a frustration right now as a mentor for people who are starting a business, especially for people who write business books. Be good in marketing. I disagree. Entrepreneur at the beginning does not need marketing, does not need to be a marketer, but he or she needs to be a detective. What does that mean? You need to find that one person that you don't need to persuade, that already needs it. In other words, find your idiot. Because the idiot, it's such a beautiful word, because when you start to think about the word idiot, okay, I see a face, and it's individual. And then step two, find in your cell phone 10 people who are as close to that idiot as possible, and call them. And then you will know perfectly the market analysis that otherwise a consultant would charge a ton of money for.
I like it. Does this mean I can't buy your book because I'm 61? Just double checking.
No.
So we have 5 minutes left.
Wow.
What's the last thing that you want to say to this group of people?
Any questions from the audience? Just raise your hand. I mean, this is a sacred, you know, environment here that you can ask any questions that we'll like to address.
Do you have an exit strategy?
Well, great question. I think since you sold your first company, can you share about your exit strategy, or because you had to?
Can I be a bit spiritual about this one? You know, what's the exit strategy for me personally? So. Here's the story. Entrepreneurship, I think people who start this, we're all somewhat frustrated. Parents didn't like what we're doing. We wanted to prove ourselves because we never had a girlfriend in high school. There was some personal trauma that happened. I don't know. One of the most profound stories about entrepreneurship that I have ever encountered was basically there's this girl in Slovenia whose frustration was actually quite profound. She survived a terrorist attack in France in Bataclan. Mm. And it was, something that merits soul searching. What do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? And it was an exploration of why did this happen to me that took her all the way to the Arab world to really dive deep into that culture. And there was this belief that people are good in her, and she wanted to prove this by finding a link between those two cultures. That was the start. What she ended up doing was really weird. She ended up walking into a race where camels were racing, you know? And she saw that people there basically give camels only dates and honey before the race, which is kind of like drinking Red Bull before a marathon. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening next was a company was created. This girl from Slovenia ended up taking her expertise as a professional sportsman before, from a country with 6 camels alone, created a company that produces food supplements for racing camels, and in 2 months' time since basically starting, sold 500,000 of products. Insane. That's my exit strategy in a social venture. It's not the purpose to do something and sell the company. For us, the general idea is, let's just do something that's going to leave the world a better place. Mm. And to conclude this, I'd like to just give a personal shout out, because the girl is sitting there in the front row, and her name is Tiasha. I think she deserves a round of applause. Because that's what it is.
I don't have an exit strategy. For me, is whatever I want to get involved in, I want to do for the purpose of the lifetime. And so I never build anything in the purpose of just selling it, because I think that's selling out your baby. Mm-hmm. And as a parent of 2 daughters, you know, it's like that's my baby. I want to grow and see it, you know, the best it can be. It's never so exit is never part of the thought process.
He's younger than I am. Because I do have an exit strategy. 3 to 5 years, sell our company for X multiple, and go on and do other great, amazing things with my life.
So we don't have time for any other questions. I just want to state for me, and I think it's probably true for all of you, I've been doing panels for 5 years. This is my favorite one that I've ever worked on. I want to thank the 3 of you.